What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp, managing editor, Fightful.com, FightfulSelect.com, where you guys are at right now. This edition of the Fightful Report podcast will be a bit of an amalgamation. It's Q&A week, so usually we get a ton of questions. It's Christmas week. There weren't that many questions. I know that's an anomaly, so I'm going to combine that into this Fightful Report podcast. That way, I don't drop some shorthanded show on you all later this week or anything like that. But I thought that with the Q&A, with the special Fightful Weekly, which focuses on the story, I thought that that would be a nice way to do it. I'll also talk a little bit about the New Japan Pro Wrestling and Joshi discussion that was had recently. So we're going to have a lot of different things on this show to kind of get you through your Christmas week. But let's go ahead and talk about what's in the Fightful Wrestling Weekly this week. Instead of wrestling scoops, because there's not that many this week, I've decided to kind of forego the standard and instead hold that off until next week. You know, you get Wrestle Kingdom and Impact Homecoming, a lot of that stuff going on. And I believe the Fightful Wrestling Weekly will actually run a day early next week with all those shows and the NWA pop-up as well. So be on the lookout for that a little bit early. But I've decided I'm going to talk about the story, especially since Jimmy Van told it on the Listen Ya Boy 102 recently. The story is something that was teased for quite a while. Fightful gained access to WWE Raw and SmackDown run sheets earlier in the year, but waited until around, I think it was the night after WrestleMania when Fightful first posted them. This led to us posting the actual run sheets on this Fightful Select premium service several times as an incentive for some to join. And we would leave them as is and post them in the form in which we got them. And our source is somebody that nobody would ever know and never will know, and that won't be revealed unless the person themselves comes out and says, "Hey, we did this. There you go." So that type of situation, when that happens, you have to be careful. People's jobs are at stake. People's livelihoods are at stake. And I never got an answer as to why these people were so excited to kind of open this info up to me, but as a result, it opened up information for a lot of other people. I had a lot of other sources develop because of this, whether it be wrestlers backstage, employees, people who used to work for the company. It opened a lot of doors in that regard, and we already had plenty of sources. We weren't exactly hard up for wrestling news. We'd get access to these sometimes an hour before the show and as far in as like 20 minutes into the show. They contained a list of the night's matches, planned vignettes, commercial breaks, spots, snipes at the end of shows, and a lot of other infos. And on occasion, there would be producer and referee info that would also be included. But that was information that Fightful already had well before. We were running stories on who produced what matches for a little bit before that, too, I believe. Several exclusive stories came out of these. Returns, debuts, scheduled pay-per-view matches. And we would end up posting full stories on these at Fightful.com along with a rundown of the event. Posting the sheets themselves was kind of inconsistent, and usually I would only, or Fightful would only do that rather whenever there was a bit of a time crunch. Whenever Fightful would get the sheets a couple minutes before airtime, we would go ahead and post the whole thing on FightfulSelect.com. WWE was well aware of this. They knew as far back as April because, I mean, they'd be getting tagged in tweets. I would have wrestlers reach out to me and say, "What do you know?" And backstage employees would reach out and say, "What do you know?" and stuff like that. And sometimes WWE limits access to websites like ours. When a pro wrestling website covers wrestling full-time, and they're not a part of, like, the Vox network or, you know, whatever Uproxx is, all that stuff, WWE hopes that we will aggregate the people that they give access to. And the thing is, we have to, because if we don't, you all will go elsewhere for your wrestling news. You'll go somewhere that does. And that's really, I mean, that's how a lot of the aggregators, the Ringside News, the Wrestling Inc., the WrestleZones, built the Raja.coms, the TPWWs. That's how they built themselves. Now, there are places like WrestleZone and Wrestling Inc. that also have exclusive stories, but you get the picture. I need to bore you with those details. Either way, they do this in hope that we will aggregate stories that they do grant access to, in effect, feeding two birds with one scone, as they say these days. This also gives them the ability to restrict the type of questions that are asked to their wrestlers. They think that people who are more plugged in may ask a different set of questions, and even though this never affects anything on the NXT media calls, they always go smoothly, they still do this. Speaking of those, prior to getting these run sheets, Fightful was not invited on these NXT media calls. It just wasn't the case. I would reach out to WWE PR at the beginning of the week of NXT shows, and a couple times I was rejected, and they said, "Oh, well, other outlets are grandfathered in." And I'm thinking, well, this outlet was created after I had access at another website, so that's not the case. I used to get these emails. The point being that the access was already being limited for whatever it was. Things I had reported on, the age of our site, traffic, it's really speculation, but there were limitations put on our site. That would later change, and maybe that's because of a more familiar relationship with WWE PR, but during the summer, Fightful broke a story about Paul Heyman writing during Bobby Lashley and Roman Reigns segments based on information that was listed on a run sheet that Fightful gained access to. We sought confirmation from WWE as well as other people before running it. The response that Fightful got back was, what sheet are you talking about? Like they didn't know where we would get that type of information. We said, I don't even think there was a response issued. And then a couple hours later, there was a cease and desist letter from WWE Legal demanding that the scripts or rundowns or whatever it is that they call it be removed. They claimed that it was their copyrighted intellectual property. Fightful's Legal went back and forth with WWE Legal, and eventually Fightful agreed to remove some of the scripts that were posted verbatim behind the paywall on Fightful Select, as that could possibly be construed as profiting off of someone else's intellectual property if those rundowns are in fact copyrighted, and I'm not sure that they are. And we thought, you know, this is a good way, we'll maintain a positive working relationship with WWE. And shortly after, WWE said, okay, good, glad that you did that, but we demand to know the source of that run sheet. Now, quite frankly, that's an issue, personally, to me. That was an issue to Jimmy Van. That was an issue to people at Fightful. There's an issue with Fightful Legal. That is a major compromise to journalistic integrity. Now, I know a lot of people have this warped, distorted idea of what journalistic integrity is. I took media ethics classes, and Even if you aren't in media, I would highly recommend those just to get a better idea of it. You can have unnamed sources. That's normal. Sometimes that's how people whistleblow. That's how sometimes people get information out there that needs to be out there. Now, it is our job as media to decipher which of those have an agenda and filter that accordingly and not further someone's agenda that probably shouldn't be. But Fightful did not have a non-disclosure agreement with WWE. We, as Fightful, did not have an obligation to reveal any sources. We did not have a contract with WWE as it relates to run sheets or any additional backstage info we've received for that matter. So a couple weeks after that issue, the contact between WWE Legal and Fightful Legal ceased. And I believe during that period, we actually had contact with WWE PR, although it had been intermittent. There are times when WWE will not get back to us, and there will be times they're incredibly accommodating. Full disclosure, WWE provided me with comp tickets to Starrcade in Cincinnati. However, they did that after I contacted them with the request of media interviews. And I said, hey, you know, I've got a pretty good reach in the Cincinnati area. You contact me, maybe I could syndicate it on Fightful, get it in some local papers, drum up some attention locally. They ended up giving us comp tickets, which I appreciated. I was able to cover the show, was able to have a good time there. And that positive working relationship with WWE continued, and it got to the point to where not only would I be invited onto those NXT calls, I would receive emails ahead of that saying, hey, we're going to send out the RSVP, make sure you RSVP. And I'm thinking, nice, cool. Fightful continued to run news on Raw and SmackDown spoilers throughout the year. As recently as a couple weeks ago, Mustafa Ali and Daniel Bryan being set for SmackDown. The Becky Lynch news that Fightful had via a number of sources. We had stuff on Crown Jewel. We've had a lot of stuff ahead of the shows. And by that point, barely used any information from the run sheets. We would use working titles for the program. However, after we ceased doing this, we learned that towards the end of the summer, WWE made significant changes to these run sheets that they would distribute. They moved away from listing names of segments and producers, instead opting to go with more vague superstar versus superstar options in an effort to keep their show's contents a secret, which is their right to do so. I encourage them to do so, personally. Fightful is not affected in any drastic way because of this, but hey, it's their show. However they want to protect the information from leaking out, I'm sure it's a pain in the ass of some of their backstage employees. I'm sure it's a pain in the ass of some of their distribution partners, but we would hear from some within the television industry who were angry about this, that they filed complaints. There were people who contacted me that I did not know, and they were like, hey, your website putting these out there made this way harder. And I actually considered on my own behalf, and I didn't really have much to do with this legal discussion because, hey, it wasn't my legal battle to have. But I thought maybe Fightful should reach out to WWE and say, hey, well, we'll just stop running the information. We won't run the information if you want to make it easier on these people who should not have been affected by that. But hey, like I said, WWE's a right to do so, to protect any of their information. But WWE Legal and Fightful cease communication, and you know, we've kept that relationship open while still reporting objectively. I told you guys about the NXT media calls and Starrcade. We've still broken stories, planned happenings for Crown Jewel, WWE's negotiations with AJ Styles, Becky Lynch being pulled from Survivor Series, Daniel Bryan's contract updates, Raw's overruns ending, Triple H's pec injury, Performance Center coaches, lots of backstage news. And our goal is to provide you all with that exclusive news in a professional manner, but an entertaining manner, while still also covering all the news that isn't exclusive to us. I did have one person who asked if, because we announced the Mustafa Ali versus Daniel Bryan match literally maybe 2 minutes before Mustafa Ali and Bryan was announced by WWE. And somebody asked, oh, well, did they get tipped off that you knew? I don't think so. I don't think that WWE had any idea that we knew or had reported it. That's just, while nice and funny and a nice little anecdote, no, that's not the case. But yeah, that's the story. WWE threatened to sue Fightful. Fortunately, they didn't have to go there. But yeah, they definitely affected the way that some of their... I don't know if they affected the way that USA distributes the show or anything, because the only person that I heard from was internationally. And sorry, fella. Another story in the Fightful Wrestling Weekly is about Jimmy the Vulture. So you may have heard me mentioning recently that on occasion I listen to Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder's Major Wrestling Figure Podcast. Now, I'm not really a wrestling figure collector, but I used to be. I used to love them, of course, when I was a kid, and I think it's a perfect nostalgia show, and I think they're the great, they're great picks to host that. In fact, Fightful was planning on running, we were planning on running a cycled show on Fridays. One week it'd be about wrestling video games, one week it'd be about wrestling belts, one week it'd be about wrestling figures, and then probably the other week about merchandise or something, but some of the title belt people didn't, like, I wasn't the person to host these shows. And when I saw that Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins were doing a figure show, I was like, man, well, we're not going to beat that out. What's the point? I legitimately think that our Raw and SmackDown post shows are better than other Raw and SmackDown post shows. I think that we can provide things that they can't. I don't know that we could have put together a better figure show than Ryder and Hawkins were, so I was like, you know what? We'll set that one out. They also have a web series called Figure It Out, and they were in Cincinnati. Now, some of you know I live about 80 minutes from Cincinnati. Myself and Nikita Krylov fan went to the Cincinnati toy store that they were at and made a couple purchases because I decided I would collect some figures of wrestlers who were from the Kentucky area. And there was this spot in the Figure It Out episode that they were in where Zack Ryder tried to buy an LJN prototype of Sergeant Slaughter. Now, if you've watched List and Your Boy, you may know that Jimmy Van is a noted LJN collector and has actually been in contact with Ryder several times. Ryder, on Figure It Out, offered the guy who had the prototype $10,000. Now, Jimmy Van can correct me if I'm wrong, but these prototypes are unreleased versions that the mold will be based on eventually. And now, Jimmy Van obviously has nice resources. At least based on his number one business. Like, we don't spend to the point of craziness at Fightful. We want to make money, and contrary to popular belief, you can't just slap down a bunch of money on a table and make money in pro wrestling. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. However, in his recreational life, he is able to splurge on things like that. Jimmy talked the guy not only into buying the figure, but the guy insisted on driving the figure up from Cincinnati to Toronto a couple weeks ago, ahead of Listen Your Boy 100. And the guy said that he did it because he wanted to buy a new barn. So you can take from that what you will. But Jimmy actually spoke to Zack Ryder about it, who was in disbelief and seemed a little bit peeved. And maybe a little bit off-put and a little bit like he might not have believed it was real after he offered $10,000 for it. When I posted on Twitter that Jimmy was talking about it on the air, Ryder, presumably joking, wrote back, "Clickbait City." I thought that was very funny. You never know who we'll end up talking to in that regard. I just thought that was a hilarious story because I do dig the Ryder podcast, and I haven't listened to his show from that week to see if he talked about it or not, but I'm going to very soon. I'll have a couple of days over Christmas and Christmas Eve where maybe I get that opportunity to do that. But I did think that was a very funny story, and even though I don't call Jimmy Van an eccentric millionaire on the podcast anymore, he still is to that degree, but he is also a very effective millionaire, and we're pushing Fightful to help accentuate that instead of punish that. Let's get into the injury report and the contract expiration dates. Man, the Raw injury report's looking a little bit better. Roman Reigns announced he was battling leukemia October 22nd. He is sidelined indefinitely. Braun Strowman, elbow surgery on 11/26, expected out several weeks. Rumored that he may not be cleared to return until the Royal Rumble. He technically performed in a match at TLC, but did not really get physical. Triple H tore his pectoral on 11/2, had surgery 4 days later. He has returned to TV as a character, as an authority figure. Expect him back in spring, if he even comes back for then, and maybe SummerSlam or something. Alexa Bliss sidelined with a concussion since October 20th. Has not wrestled since, despite Mark Henry saying that she is cleared for a return. She is battling an illness as well. Jason Jordan has recovered from a neck injury since January, which was originally said to be minimally invasive. He has now missed almost a year and is working as a producer. Fandango Torres left labrum in early July, sidelined until late this year, but is training for his return. We also saw his tag team partner, Tyler Breeze, get some shine on TV this week. And the week before, for that matter. Sami Zayn. He and Kevin Owens returning. Best case scenario for both of those guys. Double shoulder surgery in June for Sami. Vignettes have aired for his return. He was expected back maybe WrestleMania season if they were lucky. Kevin Owens, double knee surgery in October. He was expected out 4 to 8 months, which would have put him at February to maybe June. Vignettes in December, now for his return. I think that's awesome. Good for him. Goldust, double knee surgery in July, expected back next year, but he says the end of his career is coming. He is working as a talent scout for WWE. He appeared at Invicta recently, scouting some female talent. Rowan, he and his tag team partner Harper are out of action. Rowan, since August, with a torn right bicep, he worked and dropped those titles. A lot of respect to him for that. He's expected back in the spring. Harper underwent surgery in October, out of action since then with a wrist injury. Figured if he's off TV, why not? Bray Wyatt's also off TV. Nobody knows what's up with him. He had heat when he left, though, from what I was told. Sin Cara had a knee injury in August and subsequently had surgery. Pardon me. He's expected back early next year, but it's said to be cleared. But yeah, expected back next year. That's an easy thing to say since you have 1 week of shows left. Ty Dillinger sustained a hand injury and had surgery in late October. He started rehab at the beginning of this month, although he comically denied that in a conversation with me on Twitter, and it's kind of put out there. He did it. In NXT, Eric Bugenhagen has a concussion. Tino Sabatelli tore his pectoral muscle in late April 2018, required surgery out until next year. Tegan Nox tore ACL, MCL, LCL, dislocated her kneecap, tore both meniscuses. No timetable for her return, but she had her knee scoped, had some gunk cleaned out, at least that's what she said. Finn Balor, also I forgot to mention, Finn Balor returned from his illness at TLC, so he's good to go. Had several wrestlers that were under the weather recently. One of those was EC3. Hasn't wrestled in a month, but has been called up to the big show. If he's under the weather, then he's doing all right because he was sidelined today at the Cleveland Browns game. Dakota Kai had a knee injury on December 7th. Feared a torn ACL, but if she's up walking around in a bikini on a torn ACL 3 weeks in, that would be impressive. So maybe it's an ACL strain. That's me speculating. That is not me reporting something. Over at Impact, Sanjay Dutt tore his right Achilles tendon a year ago. His return is unknown. Missed all of 2018, but has taken WrestleMania weekend appearance bookings. Rosemary likely tore her ACL in February, but didn't get it fixed until a couple months later. Out of action until next year. Ring of Honor, New Japan. Shibata, subdural hematoma. He commits to a return, but that's unlikely. Hikuleo tore his ACL in March. Hopefully we can get him back early next year. He would be a nice addition to Bullet Club firing squad. Hiromu Takahashi landed on his neck, was hospitalized back in July. Apparently won't require surgery, but seems like we'd be lucky to get him back. Hopefully we do. Tennille Dashwood has had shoulder surgery in October. Sidelined until next year, but she is still making appearances for Ring of Honor. MLW, man. God, could they have worse luck? Teddy Hart cracked his head on the side of a ladder. You had Andrew Everett tweak his knee. You had Cody get a little injured as well. Like, it was, they had a rough set of tapings, and it was even rougher going into it. Tom Lawler went into that show with a broken hand from a month before. Surgery wasn't required. He worked through it. You had MJF got stripped of the title, MLW middleweight title, because he fractured his elbow in late November. He should be back now or the next couple weeks. Rey Fénix had a groin strain, but he'll be back in 2019. He's wrestling on Homecoming. Marco Stunt broke his leg on 11-17 and had surgery. Joey Ryan suspected torn pectoral muscle and had surgery in early November. Jason Kay broke his ankle, hadn't wrestled in a month and a half. Rough for him. Other promotions around the world, Vanessa Craven broke her leg in late October, required surgery. Swervo hospitalized in November after that blood clot from, or after the cinder block led to a blood clot. That was nasty. You have Cody Rhodes working with a torn meniscus surgery plan for after Wrestle Kingdom. Contract updates. Mauro Ranallo, June 2019 for WWE. Kevin Owens, April 2023 at minimum. Signed a 5-year deal in 2018. It is possible, based on WWE historical contract updates, that they froze it, but who knows. Page 2019 expiration. These are as of last update. It's always possible that these guys re-signed or girls re-signed and we don't know about it yet. But as of the last update, Big Show Spring 2021, Mandy Rose late 2020, Jim Ross March 2019, The Miz 2022, Stephanie McMahon October 7th, 2019 as an on-screen talent, Mojo Rawley 2020. Rey Mysterio, allegedly he has an out clause after 18 months, so he can get out and is signed through 2020, October that year. The Good Brothers, September 2019, but they are back on TV and winning some now. Shinsuke Nakamura, although it looks like he's going to stay in America, 2019 was the expiration date for his 3-year deal, as was AJ Styles. Apparently signed through April 2019. Over New Japan and Ring of Honor, Young Bucks, Cody Rhodes, Hangman Page, Scorpio Sky, Shane Taylor, Christopher Daniels, Kazarian, Beer City Bruiser through 2018. Scorpio Sky, or Shane Taylor rather, did tell me that he would listen to offers but is likely to remain loyal to Ring of Honor. Kenny Omega, January 2019. Jim Ross and Josh Barnett with access through January 2019, but they have been effectively replaced. Madison Rayne, September 2019. Kota Ibushi working as a freelancer. That's good for him. Flip Gordon, signed through 2020. Silas Young through 2021. I thought that was a good signing for them to retain. I told you guys about the weird Shane Strickland thing. Reported to have signed a multi-year deal in mid-2018 with MLW, but now it's said that he was signed through mid-December. Now it's said that he's working some January dates. Now it's said that maybe Lucha Underground is preventing him from signing with WWE. Who knows, man? I know Selena, Rey Fénix, and Pentagon Jr. all signed through 2019 per Court Bauer of MLW. Pentagon and Fénix also reportedly have Season 5 out clauses with Lucha Underground. Moose allegedly signed through Impact or with Impact Wrestling through July 2020. As the kids say, it's lit. Let's talk about some of these Q&As. Carlos asks, do you think there's a way to fix the booking disconnect between NXT and the main roster? Yes. Triple H taking over and his team taking over. I would highly suggest the Fightful Q&A podcast that I did with Simon Willis about the booking stuff. I mean, we fielded all kinds of questions, answered all kinds of stuff there, and lots of anything you all have to ask. I'm sure that Simon, for his next recommended podcast, will recommend that as well, because we got a lot of stuff in there. I thought that we weren't going to have enough stuff to get into, and man, you all really hit us with a lot of them. So I would recommend that. Josephus of NWA fame, former NWA title challenger, says, I have a question, Sean. Will the wrestling world finally forgive the sins of David Arquette after I shave his head in the middle of the ring? NWA pop-up will be a new beginning for everyone. Well, I think David Arquette's going to win that match, January 5th, NWA pop-up. But I think most people, at least most people with, I don't want to say with sense, I don't want to insult anybody, but most people that are reasonable have forgiven David Arquette. They know that David Arquette didn't really like the idea of him winning the title. They know that he gave his salary to, I believe, the families of Brian Pillman and somebody else. And he's done a lot of indie shows. He's paying his dues in reverse, so to speak. DK says, was Vince in talks or involved in the talks with the Elite, or was it actually all just H? I don't know who was involved in the talks, but I'd be very surprised if it was Vince himself. What is your highlight of 2018, personally or professionally? Ooh, I don't know. Increasing Fightful revenue to the point to where, I'll be honest, I don't look at traffic numbers. I look at YouTube numbers. That's it. I don't look at web traffic numbers as often. I mean, if I need to, if somebody says this doesn't draw and I need to show that it does, I'll take a look and reinforce my point. Or if it does draw, but December was a very good month for Fightful. December was probably the highlight. We had a lot of sponsors. We had a lot of YouTube activity. We have launched our Fightful MMA YouTube. I would like to grow that, but I don't know. My thing is, I always set my goals so high that they can't really be achieved because I want to strive to do better. There's a lot of work to put into this. Personally, oh man. Whew, that's a tough one. I don't know. I'm just a really happy dude. I'm really happy I get to talk to you guys about this. Professionally, probably some YouTube milestones. 10 million downloads was nice. Overall, I'm a guy who broadcasts from his office at home in Ewing, Kentucky, so that was very happy. What was the best Christmas present you received as a kid? That's from my boy Graham Williams. Yeah, I think back of a lot of them, but the one that I think back to, and I'm like, man, I would love to have that today, is a Tyco Tantrum. If you all don't remember Tyco Tantrums, it was an RC car, and I would love it with a camera today. It was an RC car that really couldn't be stopped because it had these wheels on the front that rotated, and it would flip the car over if it ended upside down. So it was very, very, very hard to stop the Tyco Tantrum. And man, I gave that thing hell. I ran it off stuff. I ran it through stuff. I ran over my other toys with it. A lot of that also has a big Toy Story. I'm still a big Toy Story guy. And the year that Toy Story released, there were no Toy Story toys to be found. It was a hot commodity in Maysville, Kentucky. And the only thing really left were like the Burger King toys, and they had a Woody puppet doll that was remarkably similar to the actual Woody. No pull string, but it was pretty good size, and the guy that my mom was seeing at the time was able to get me one of those, and I was 10 years old, and I was overjoyed. I thought it was cool. Wanted a Buzz Lightyear, but man, beggars can't be choosers in that situation, and I was so happy. Here's one under the radar for you. It was probably a year or two later, but the Men in Black soundtrack. Now, you think, well, the Men in Black soundtrack, why, what, why? Why is that such a big deal? Well, it introduced me to R&B music, which I am a huge fan of. I love the Men in Black soundtrack. Now, also worth mentioning, this was a cassette tape in 1997. So it was Men in Black, the album. I don't think it was the Men in Black soundtrack. I think there are two different things. But it also introduced me to a lot of hip-hop music. Will Smith, I was already familiar with. Snoop Dogg, Jermaine Dupri, I was not. They had a song on there. Genuine, I had no idea who that was. Alicia Keys, nobody knew who that was. She didn't hit it big till 3 or 4 years later, but she was on that album. The Roots, one of my favorite groups of all time now, they were there. D'Angelo, awesome. Trey Lorenz was on that album. Nas was on that album. Destiny's Child, nobody knew about them for a couple of years. They had a great song on there. De La Soul, and my favorite, A Tribe Called Quest, my favorite hip-hop group of all time. And Same Old Thing is a great song. I got my first exposure to a lot of hip-hop and R&B music because of that Men in Black, the album. And I got that for Christmas in 1997 when I was 12 years old. And I loved it. Loved it. Good stuff. Man, Graham, you're making me go back down memory lane. Ben asks, you may have answered this in the past, what happened to that random Sasha loves Bayley storyline? That was never meant to be construed the way that it was. A lot of people construed that as, oh, that's a lesbian storyline. They're falling in love. They're going to do that. That was never the plan. that was a way to further their storyline. Jonathan says, how much juice does Daniel Bryan have backstage? Seems like he really helped get Mustafa Ali an opportunity as a guy that Daniel Bryan wanted to work with. On the other hand, Daniel Bryan came back against Big Cass. It's weird because you would assume that during contract negotiations, he would have more leverage and more pull for that, right? That's how it seems. It seems backwards. Daniel Bryan is very, very, very well-liked and respected backstage. And the fact that he broke through the glass ceiling says a lot. He has quite a bit of juice backstage. He is not only a major player in WWE, he is a good merch seller. I don't care what you've heard about his merch. His shirt was sold out in every size but small last week. He's got some juice. And, I think you're spot on there. He wanted to work with Mustafa Ali, and he subsequently is working with Mustafa Ali, and Mustafa Ali is getting wins over him. It's a very cool landscape. I agree. What are the chances Kenny and Marty jump to WWE rather than join AEW? I feel like Marty especially might jump because Deonna's already there, so it would make the relationship less difficult, in my opinion. Yeah, that's something I've echoed on this podcast before, or the Q&A podcast in general. But yeah, I think so too, and it's no secret, Deonna and Marty are head over heels about each other, and quite frankly, can become a power couple. Marty would be an excellent addition to that roster. He has a unique in-ring style. He is over. He can work comedy. He can work serious. He can work cruiserweight or heavyweight. He can work tag teams, he can work trios, he can work in a stable, he can do a lot of different things. A lot of similarities between he and Shane Helms, I think. And a lot of people will say, oh, Shane Helms, oh, that jobber. Because, I mean, it's Shane. But no, I think that's a great person to draw comparisons to. Shane made a lot of money. Do you anticipate an AEW presence during Mania Week? I don't. I think that they have enough respect for Ring of Honor in New Japan to stay out of there. I do think some of the guys will be on the New Japan ROH show if they still work for New Japan. To your knowledge, do the contracts of Cobb and Bandido mean they'll get regular work in New Japan? Or is that a separate provision that each wrestler works out with New Japan should New Japan want them? It is a separate provision. But I can't see why New Japan wouldn't want more of Cobb and more Bandido. But yeah, to my knowledge, it is separate because there are some people who just can't get in there despite their best efforts. What brand would you have Aleister Black on? And you guys would kill me, but I'd say 205 Live. I think they need somebody like him. Otherwise, I would say SmackDown. Especially if you're going the more sport route with that, with Fox. But I really think that 205 Live could use the juice, and then eventually he moves up and joins SmackDown. And you can use 205 Live as a buffer. Speaking of 205 Live, Jonathan says, Lanza found some shocking stats about how little some of these 205 Livers work. Some of them are getting as little as one match per month with no work on the road, not even on the Largo Loop. Yet these guys are making how much money? There's also Grand Metal Leak's not-so-subtle tweet this week about a poll between CMLL and the Independents. Are any of these 205 Live guys getting tired of essentially being hoarded talent by WWE, signed for the sake of signing everyone, not even to work? Seems like WWE isn't releasing anyone these days unless they ask, or if they don't show up to the PC. Could any of these guys ask to leave? No one seems to have the potential, be a potential business mover like Pac, so it's not like they're even losing a potential business maker or difference maker. I think Leo Rush could be. I've been outspoken. I think he's one of the most outstanding talents I've ever seen in a pro wrestling ring. There's never a time that he'll wrestle that I'll say, yeah, I'll post on that, or I'll pass on that, rather. Yeah, it is amazing. I had heard that the reason they got Leo Rush and Mustafa Ali and a lot of guys up there is because they felt like they were wasting their talent on 205 Live because they weren't working. You're not wrong. Lance is not wrong either. It is amazing how little some of these guys work. Now, I've not heard anything about people being upset, but Grand Metal Leak's tweet, how else do you interpret that? I haven't spoken to the man, but how else can you interpret that tweet? Where he's saying CMLL or Indies? Well, if I were Grand Metal League and I were watching Lince Dorado work those matches instead of me, while you sit out there and shake a noisemaker, I'd probably tweet that too. Especially with the landscape being the way that it is. Ring of Honor would love to have him. MLW would love to have him. Impact would love to have him. And I guarantee you AEW would love to have a Grand Metal League. A guy who got signed and people were like, where the hell is this guy? For so long. Just wasn't around. 30 years old. Wasting some of the prime years of his career. Maybe some of the prime years of his career. He's been wrestling for 13 years. And it's a little bit different here. In Mexico, you work the shoulder roll style a lot more. You're bumping. You're flat backing in WWE. You're flat backing, man. I can't tell you how much of a difference that is. And I know somebody will ask me why that difference is. It's in large part, they work that six-sided ring that is so stiff. You got to shoulder roll through a lot of that stuff, man. Ah, those are so stiff. They're like boxing rings. So let's go ahead and talk about it. I was in a conversation on Saturday, and I'm ashamed of how much time I spent discussing it because I wasted one of my off days that I rarely get. But I like the conversation, and I like to learn. One of my favorite parts about my job is learning. And I had put out a tweet that said, I think that New Japan should integrate women. That first line, clear that it's my opinion. I think that New Japan should have women. I don't know how they would integrate them. Now let me break down that line. I don't know how they would integrate them because I am not all too familiar with the New Japan or the Japanese scene as it pertains to women. I know they have a lot of female-only promotions. I know what their attendance numbers are because they are sent to me on a weekly basis. I see some GIFs from Total Divas Eps. I follow the results. I get those as well. We had Deonna Purrazzo write about her experience in Stardom for us last year, and thankfully so. It was a great piece. But I mean, I don't have the time to actively seek out Stardom and Ice Ribbon and things of that nature, because you may know, 30 hours of my week are instantly compromised watching pro wrestling, reviewing pro wrestling. That's it. That's before I get into all the other duties that I won't bore you with. So I have to put those on a priority list. Priority list is WWE number one, UFC number two, NXT number three. You have to remember WWE has two brands. You got your Bellators, your Impacts, your Ring of Honor, soon All Elite Wrestling. Your North American promotions that run regularly, have TV shows, all that. Then you've got Ryzen and 1FC because they have big names and the MMA scope. Then you have whatever boxing promotions are out there. So those are my priorities from a viewing standpoint as dictated by the obligations of my employer. I am a self-employed person, independent contractor, under Fightful.com with the goal of making money for Fightful.com. And I do that, I have to review the things that most people, the majority, want me to review. Now, when I'm in a bind and I can't take in things in a timely manner, I'll have a Warren Hayes review the G1 because I could not fairly review that in a timely manner. Did I watch it? Yes, but I wasn't able to review that in a timely manner. Impact, Ring of Honor, NWA, Being the Elite, I watch all those. Can't review it in a timely manner. Steven Jensen does that. 205 Live, NXT, NXT UK, same thing. Warren Hayes does that. So in between all this content, it's tough to take that in. Not a loyal follower of it. However, I am incredibly aware that I have enjoyed Asuka. I have enjoyed Io Shirai. I have enjoyed Kairi Sane. I have enjoyed Toni Storm, Deonna Purrazzo, Shayna Baszler. I've enjoyed any number of women who have either come from Japan or worked in Japan on those tours. So my thought was, yeah, I'd like to see them. because the platform would be nice. Now, this garnered a lot of haste. A lot of people acting like I was saying it as if it was some sort of charity case. Well, that's not the case. I said I thought it would be nice because New Japan is by all means the second biggest promotion in the world. I would love to see women featured on that because they're not. I like seeing women featured on Ring of Honor now. They have a lot of work to do to that division, but I like seeing women featured on there. I wish they were treated as less of a novelty, but I really enjoy seeing them on there. How I would want them integrated into New Japan, I'm not sure. Whether it be a division, I never said a division, whether it be a match here or there, maybe. Whether it be them dipping their toes in the water in one of their Western shows, because that is an audience that is more used to that. Sure, I don't know. Just set them open to it. My issue was the fallacy that the reason that New Japan in particular does not have women in their company is because they let women have their own promotions, or that they respect women so much that they have their own promotions. That is complete and utter horseshit. DDT has women. There are a number of wrestling promotions in Japan that have women. And I had people on both sides of this argument pointing to DDT as the point. As, well, why don't you support them? Why don't you support them? Well, that's another issue here. Whether you think of me as a journalist, a media member, or an internet shit dick, I am a guy with a job. And my job is to cover pro wrestling. It is not my job to support a company. It is not my job to promote a company. The only company that I am beholden to support is Fightful.com. And on any given program, someone who buys ad space or ad time from us. And I have rejected ad time from promotions and from outlets. I won't make any bones about it. I passed up on a deal with DAZN because I thought it was a conflict of interest to promote something in which we would have a stock on based on the number of people that we signed up. And that didn't jive well with me. I felt like that could possibly taint future coverage on that outlet. Respect the offer, passed on it. So it is not our job to support a DDT. It is not our job to support Stardom. It is not our job to support New Japan Pro Wrestling. The reality is New Japan Pro Wrestling is the size of a promotion to the point to where we cover it on our website. And if New Japan Pro Wrestling featured these women, I, as someone who has to cover this amount of wrestling, would have more of an opportunity to see them than I currently do. I do have a life outside of wrestling, you know. I like to do some other stuff. But if they were on New Japan, I would have that opportunity that I don't have now because of, quite frankly, time constraints. However, I would get people. I got the main thing I got was, "You're uneducated." And then when I would ask them to educate me, it wouldn't happen. It would never happen. So I reached out to wrestlers, I reached out to journalists, I reached out to people who said, "Educate me." I would say that I had, if I contacted 12 people that said, "You are uneducated," two people, or one person, had a conversation with me about that. And that was Emily Pratt, who sent along some links, which I greatly appreciated. Sierra didn't say that I was uneducated, but we had a discussion privately about it, and I said, "Hey, you want to do a monthly write-up on this, and we'll see how it does? I would love that. I'm not going to root for that to fail. I would love for something like that to take off and lead to great things and great content, additional content." But also had a lot of people comparing it to New Japan. Had a lot of people comparing Stardom to New Japan. Stardom was drawing a few hundred people. They have their own streaming service. That's great. That's a great platform too. But if you're telling me that it would be bad to feature two Stardom wrestlers on New Japan Wrestle Kingdom and say, hey, they got a streaming service, that would be cool. I don't buy that. Now, I do understand the point where a lot of people are saying, oh, they would swallow Stardom whole, they would kill all these Joshi promotions. What I got a lot of were people who said, oh, New Japan would kill these Joshi promotions. And I'm like, well, what would that do? Would that mean more money for the women? Because I had multiple women say, yeah, it can get a little scary when the sponsorships aren't there. I had one of the six women that I spoke to say, yeah, you should support companies like that. You should support the women companies that are over there. And I said, hey, I get it from a fan perspective, from a media perspective. And then she said, well, then I see your point. From a fan perspective, hey, support what you want to support. I'm not going to sit here and clown somebody for watching Stardom. I had a lot of people doing that too. That was weird. They were like saying, oh, a bunch of hipsters watch Stardom. Who gives a shit who watched Stardom, man? If that's what they like, that's what people like. I have no doubts that I would enjoy Stardom if I had the man hours to watch the program. Unfortunately, I do not. But this fallacy that New Japan doesn't have women in their company because of some sense of respect. Well, that's not true. They have an incredible female fan base. Emily Pratt in her interview with Harold Mage talked about it. However, there was nothing about women performers really addressed by him. And that's not his fault. But you look at that and I had a lot of people talk about the opportunity as well. That were kind of on my side of the discussion. And again, as far as integration goes, I don't know how it would be done. I don't necessarily know the ramifications. But you know who hasn't passed up or a WWE offer? Kairi Sane, Asuka, Io Shirai, Meiko Satomura, Hiroyo Matsumoto. Sumi Sakai was all too excited to take a title reign in Ring of Honor. These additional opportunities. To act like they wouldn't enjoy the option? You're going to tell me, oh, you're a white Westerner pushing your culture on somebody. No, I said I'd like to see someone have the ability to be in a pro wrestling match. This ain't basic human rights. It's pro wrestling. It's scripted pro wrestling. I said I think it'd be cool to see him on a show. Journalists also don't have to know everything. And again, you can think I'm a journalist, a media member, an internet shit dick, whatever. We don't have to know everything. I don't have to have taken in years and years and years of Joshi wrestling to have an opinion on what I want to see on a show that I have covered for years and years and years. You know what I haven't seen for years and years and years? I didn't watch PWG for years and years and years. But I was familiar enough with some of their talent to understand about 6-7 years ago that I wanted to see more talent like that on WWE programming. I wanted the pace to change. I wanted the style to change. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think it would be fun to see women wrestling in the Tokyo Dome, on Wrestle Kingdom, not this Wrestle Kingdom. There was a ton of like putting words in my mouth. Or other people's mouths, too. I think it would be cool. Why not? Why not have the option? Doesn't have to happen tomorrow. Also, it's New Japan's company. They can do what they want. What they are doing is working very, very well for them. And sure, maybe some of the Joshi promotions are doing very well. There's some Joshi promotions that aren't doing very well, just like promotions that feature men and women. But to pretend that Stardom and all these other promotions are on the same level financially, on the same level as far as platform, eyeballs, attention, well, if they were, maybe I wouldn't be so gung-ho about the idea. This isn't the early 90s. I mean, if we were in that landscape, Fightful's probably got live coverage of some big All Japan women's shows because of the level of attention they got back then. Don't have people beating down my door for Stardom coverage. I wish they were. I would love nothing more than to do that. I'd love nothing more than to have Stardom post shows. I would love nothing more than to have us cover everything. For example, when Matt Riddle worked for Fightful.com, I thought it would be a great idea to do live shows or live coverage of the Evolve shows that he was on. They were a big money loser. We couldn't get people to show up in live coverage for a show that someone on our website was wrestling on. So you have to think about that. Where does Stardom rank on the totem pole in Japan? Then think about where it ranks relative to English-speaking promotions. Then other non-English-speaking promotions. AAA, CMLL. We get more demands to cover those than a Stardom. And I'm using them as the example because they're the most prominent example that I was provided with. And the most prominent example in which I am given that opportunity to see. I'm most likely to watch their show if those man hours opened up. But this idea that a wrestling journalist has to know everything or has to pretend that they know everything, I don't know where you guys got that from. I used the example with one of our subscribers. Man, you guys can comment on a Phoenix Suns Washington Wizards trade without watching any game that they played. It's my personal Twitter. Not everything is a report. I'm allowed to offer my opinion. You're allowed to tell me that's wrong, too. But if you tell me that my opinion is uneducated and you make no effort to educate me when I am clearly open to that, I don't know what you're trying to accomplish. I mean, I have to say honestly, and I mean, this happened a lot a few years ago. And if you don't remember it, I'm sure there are still tweets out there. When New Japan brought up the idea of potentially having an English-speaking language option commentary, there were a lot of Western fans who didn't speak a lick of Japanese but enjoyed the show in Japanese who were livid at the idea of changing the product that they know that is theirs. And I understand change can be scary. But the idea that segregation is better than integration at the highest levels of Japanese wrestling, I don't get it. Now, I also understand that it kind of got forced into promotions in Mexico too, and it didn't work out so hot. Well, that's the benefit of doing business and having a lot of talent, is that you can kind of go back on that. You can say, hey, it didn't work. We tried it. All right. I mean, the UFC did it with flyweights. They're doing it with women's featherweights. There was a time when UFC said they would never have women. Didn't last. Things changed. The world didn't crumble. Everything's all right. Everything's better, in my opinion. But if you're going to tell me that I'm uneducated about something, do me the favor. Make an attempt to educate me. You don't have to do it in front of a big crowd. I'm open to having the discussion within DMs. My goal as a member of the media is not to dunk on people. It can be fun. But I spoke to three people with New Japan experience who said, I don't know why they don't. Wouldn't mind it. Never had anybody really within the company that was gung-ho for it or against it. Mostly like, why not? So that's my stance. Why not? But again, you do not have to be an expert on a subject. You do not have to follow a subject religiously to have an opinion on another subject. Because my commentary was not on the Joshi scene. My commentary was on New Japan Pro Wrestling. Didn't have to be anything about the expanded Joshi wrestling scene or anything like that. It could just be, hey, you know what? If it were Chelsea Green versus Deonna Purrazzo on Wrestle Kingdom 1 year, I'd probably like it. Sure, why not? Give it a shot. Also, Chelsea Green wasn't talking about New Japan, which was funny because I had a lot of people saying, Chelsea Green's a cop now, and they really went and got aggressive at Chelsea Green over her tweet, which really kicked off the conversation. That wasn't what she was talking about. She cited as much. But I gotta say, honestly, the most aggressive fans I've dealt with in wrestling are diehard Japanese wrestling fans from that are English-speaking. The dozens of people that I talked to from Japan that also speak English were really docile about it. They were calm about it. They were just like, hey, I agree or I disagree. People who live over there were... I didn't get any aggressive responses. There were a couple that disagreed with me, but they weren't aggressive like the other ones. I mean, look at it this way. It's nowhere near UFC fans. I mean, you could literally tweet the happiest tweet of all time and get some kind of weird racist reply. I don't see any racism within New Japan fans, so that's neat. But that's my rant. Don't expect wrestling journalists to know everything. And don't look down on wrestling journalists when they want to learn about something either. I reserve the right to be wrong about stuff. You're not going to hear me be wrong about a lot of stories because I do a lot of my fact-checking. You're going to hear a lot of opinions maybe be off-kilter with what you agree with, and I'm more than happy to talk to you guys about it. I'll never be above that. That's what I love to do. But, yes, I would like to see women wrestle in New Japan. My opinion has not changed. It will not change. I would like to see that. No, I do not know the ramifications in which would unfold, and neither do you, because we've never seen it. So instead of introducing hypothetical peril to a hypothetical situation in an aggressive fashion, maybe just take the time and talk to your neighbor. Love you guys. Till next time, Merry Christmas. We're out.